It is the Rhetoric Warriors podcast coming at you once again from the juncture of rhetoric and life and politics and comedy and all sorts of cool stuff. It's like an intellectual bouncy house. We're just all just bouncing around trying to find the good stuff about public talk. I'm Dr. Dan, rhetorician, late night comedy writer. Those are my worlds, founder of Rhetoric Warriors. The podcast, I do three things. I talk to comedians about their careers and their politics because they're crazy. I convert conservatives because the right worries me. I think they need to be talked with. And I talk to persuasion pros and rhetoricians and people who have different perspectives that they're moving and pushing out into the world. And that's certainly my guest today. I would call this another episode of Persuasion Pros. And my guest is a personal development human, and she's a life purpose coach, and she's got about 40 titles. You need to look at her LinkedIn bio and her website, because it's just this cool experience of like strolling through a garden of healing and self-improvement, you know, in a good way. There's so many flowers and plants, and you're like, maybe that one. She's the founder and owner of Alma Armor, if I say that correctly, wellness center and vegan restaurant, which until pandemic times was in Peru. Now she's locked down in Yorkshire in the UK. Marie Johnston. Did I say that right? How do you say your place?
Marie Johnston, Yorkshire. I'm in Yorkshire.
I got that right. What about your business? Alma Armor?
Alma Armor. Alma Armor. Yeah, it's Spanish. Yeah. It means soul love.
Means what?
Soul love.
Soul love. I thought you said solo love. I'm like teaching people how to be alone. Yeah. So you've got a rainbow of stuff.
I like that. A rainbow of stuff. Yeah, I do.
You're like a little wizard. Healing modalities right here.
Yeah. The latest one is alchemy.
See? All right. So let's orient everybody to you, because I've read about you and I talked to you during lunch club. So I have a tiny idea of who you are, but tell everybody, just give them a broad overview of Marie.
What I do. Oh my goodness.
So even just a little bio, like where'd you start and where'd you get to? I know you lived a big life. Everybody has, but.
Yeah. Well, right now I coach. I coach people to connect to their hearts and live their dreams, and be very aware of their ego, their pesky ego that's holding them back.
My pesky ego over here.
Yeah. And, that's what I do on a one-to-one basis. And
have you seen Fleabag?
Fleabag?
Yes.
Yeah, I love Fleabag.
Have you seen the therapist in there? She's just kind of sitting back. You guys have about the same color hair. And she's like, I'm getting this Fleabag vibe with us right now. It's like, you're going to start to lotion your elbows in a minute.
Do you know what? It's been such a long time since I watched it. I don't think I've not watched the latest. Do you know what? I don't watch TV. I don't have a TV. But my kids come. I've got two adult children. And when they come by me, they're armed with fabulous series that we binge on.
Right.
And that was one of them. But it was like when I first came back, so I don't quite remember it. But I'm not a very traditional therapist that sat there going, how does that make you feel? I'm not really that kind of...
No, you don't get that vibe at all. Like, so anyway, just a little aside there. That was what was popping up in my head. So keep going with your background. You're a coach. So, you started with coachness.
I do. But my coaching does include some therapy. It does include some being able to let go of childhood baggage in it. Because quite a bit of inner child work in it. I do include that. And what I'm aspiring to do is start talking about our freedom and our sovereignty and being self-referenced. That's my passion. That's my latest passion. And I want to start talking about that, and I want to and I'm working at the moment on workshops and retreats that I want to hold. I do want to go back and reopen my center. I don't know whether I'll be running things from my center, but I know Peru so well. I know the Sacred Valley so well, and I know all the nooks and crannies and special places that it's not on the tourist trail.
So I'm going to come back to Peru because that's kind of fascinating. Like, you talk about it like it's just, you know, an ordinary part of your life, but like, you just use the term Sacred Valley, you know, which for most people be like, what's in the Sacred Valley? So we'll come back, but like, okay. So take us, you were raised in Yorkshire, and then you sort of moved over into, from what I can tell from your bio, a lot of different healing modalities or helping modalities or different ways of approaching life. Like, you started one place and you've moved through a lot of those.
I have to confess first, though, that I started my life in investment banking.
I saw that, right?
Which is quite...
Well, you're still doing investment banking. You're just now investing in people, right?
Well, I was always invested in people. I used to work in HR, and I used to train and recruit and nurture graduates. And you know what? I've been checking them out on LinkedIn, and they're all CEOs now, nearly all of them. So I had a pretty successful program, didn't I?
Well done.
I was getting it right. they're all up there. But then I left all of that to start my family. So I have, like I said, I have two adult children, and so I was stay-at-home mom full on, apart from the fact that I decided I wanted to learn a second language whilst I was rearing them, so kind of forced us all to move to Europe. So I had nearly 5 years in Zurich, where I learnt German. That was in Switzerland, and then I came back here. I think I was back here about 7 years, something like that. And then I kind of had a bit of a loopy, crazy midlife crisis and just took off and hiked the States and hiked the Grand Canyon down and up in a day. And I had quite a lot of loopy things. And then
I have kind of a running Grand Canyon theme the last few weeks. I interviewed my buddy. Mark Newman is like a world renowned expert on the Grand Canyon. Like, he did his dissertation on the Grand Canyon, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. So that spiritual gulch is now somehow in this podcast.
Yeah, it is just, you know what, it's phenomenal. Like, as the sun changes, because I started at daybreak and ended at sundown. And as the light's changing throughout the day and the terrain's changing, oh, it's phenomenal. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever done. And then I got fed up of living out of a backpack and thought, I'm just too old for this. I'm not cut out for backpacking anymore. And I took off back to Chicago. And there's a bit of a story about that. And then I my visa ran out, and I didn't want to go home. My visa waiver ran out. So, and I realized I thought I could just pop into Canada and see some mates or check out Mexico, but no. I had to leave the whole of North America. So I thought...
Really? They kicked you off the continent?
Yep. To renew my visa waiver? Yep. So I had this book for this hero's journey that I wanted to do. And I thought, well, why don't I go and do this on sacred ground? And I thought, I need to go to Peru. I didn't know the first thing about Peru. Didn't even know that Machu Picchu was in Peru. That's how much I knew about Peru.
Hey, I'm going to check something real quick. We're getting a little tick on our audio. Are you using an external mic or a...
No, my computer one.
Is it like on your lap or something?
Oh, you know, maybe it's not very stable. Hang on, let me put it up under my... Is that better?
Keep talking. We'll see. I think it is.
So then I got to Peru And I just fell in love with it. I mean, I was just in awe. And I tell you, I spent 7 years pinching myself every day to make sure
You
I
must have
never.
been pretty bruised. Sorry, that was just sitting there.
Just to remember, just to remind myself how lucky I was, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures on your website. Pretty stunning.
Oh, I just love it. I absolutely, absolutely love it. And oh, it's beautiful. And so I just decided I'm staying here. And so I'd left my bag in Chicago, so I had to go back and get it and break it to my friend that I wasn't staying. And yeah, I took off back, and you know what? This is what I teach people. When you follow your heart and you follow your dream and you stay in your end result, things weird, crazy things happen to help you. And that was my dream. I wanted a healing center. That's what I wanted to do. And I was in a restaurant, and a load of guys came in, including the owner, and said, "We want to play music in the corner, do you mind?" And I'm like, "No, I love that." So they went, "Oh, come on over." So they're all playing this. There was this professional Mexican guitarist. Oh my God, his fingers were
He's a
unbelievable.
professional Mexican? Is that a
Professional
job?
guitarist.
Oh, guitarist. I was gonna say, that's an interesting job.
You know where they're like their fingers are everywhere.
Yeah, I've been in
Yeah.
restaurants when they walk up while I'm trying to eat chips.
Well, this guy was, honestly, it was amazing. We were all singing, and we weren't drunk. And you know, you only sing in England when you're drunk. And yeah, it was wild. And the guy that owned the restaurant, by about 4 or 5 days in, said to me he'd got this beautiful piece of land and he wanted to create a healing center or a wellness center or something like that. And I could not believe my ears. So that's how it kind of started. I didn't end up doing it with him. All kinds of other things came up, and blah, the story goes on and on and on. But eventually I did create my own place, and I got to the point where I was breaking even. I'd opened the restaurant and I wanted to start my wellness services, but I was kind of out of practice. I'd always practice my healing modalities and my therapy and continued doing bits of coaching here and there, but I didn't have group facilitation skills that were since I'd left work, like before I had my children, and I didn't have my confidence, and it wasn't going anywhere. And I was thinking, how am I gonna? I was saying out loud, how am I gonna get community here? You know, like, how am I gonna get groups? How am I gonna do this? And I really want to do this. Like I said, another heart's desire. And I ended up coming back to the UK because my mother was having an operation that I didn't think she'd survive. She has, thankfully, but I didn't think she would. So I came back and I had tickets to go back, and I got locked down 2 weeks before I was due to go. And so the whole operation out there shut down. I got it shut down fast because we were locking down and I knew that they would be locking down. And I locked down there a day before their serious curfews, and they got locked down hard. You know, they got really much harder than we did. And so I've spent the last 2 years here. So, and building my community. You know, I have now, I've been running groups online. I've been reconnecting with everybody, all the generative coaching community that I was in. I've been learning these fantastic alchemy skills, and yeah, I've been running groups, and I've achieved everything that I was lacking. So now I am raring to get back to Peru, and I'm raring to get started with running retreats and doing that kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. This world of the pandemic, we were talking about this before we started, and Zooming and what's possible online with the breadth of community that you can reach and the ease of, you know, connecting, it's pretty awesome. But then you still want to manifest it out into the world. Like I see it with stand-up, I have all this stuff that I'd like to go up and do with a live audience, but it's just not available, you know, and you can feel that sort of chasm of lack of connection, you know, live experience, because there's no way to replicate that. This is great. And this really does, I think, complement and open gateways to that other stuff. But man, come on, let's get back to live living.
Yeah. And you know what? It's a fascinating thing, because I've met and become close friends with so many people online. And I actually recently have been meeting some of them in the flesh. And it's been the most bizarre experience, because, you know, we're all the same size online, aren't we?
Yeah,
you know, we're all this face in a box. And then you meet in person, and it's really funny, because it's this person that you've got this connection with and you feel, you know, strong friendship with, but then they're in the flesh, that there's this whole different experience.
Yeah, it is bizarre. I know, like on the lunch club stuff, the ones on the weekends where you're doing 10, 15 minutes, which I think is where we met.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, that modality of knowing that you've got a short time, that it's essentialized, that people are kind of on their game and talking about their stuff, is so different than the ones I find that are 45, set as 45 minutes. Mm. It's just the different, you know, what people bring to the moment is different. And then in person, you know, how much of the energy is dissipated around you, and the rhythms are different. And like, I'm really fascinated. So we'll talk about this, but I'm an externalist. I'm a communicationist. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really care. It's not my world to think about your internal world. My world is to think about your external world, like your behaviors. And so with communication, it's just been, I've done almost 500 of these talks now, and I take notes on all of them because it's fascinating.
I bet. Suddenly be
talking to somebody who's in Peru and watch how they talk and the cultural differences, and just fascinating. I love it.
Me too. Communication is my thing too. It's and the way that it's not even always verbal, you know. Because I learned Spanish through immersion, just through being there. I didn't have any lessons. I did a little bit later on when I was realizing that I was only ever speaking in present tense and never in past tense. But
it's gotta be weird.
You know, so I did start to take a few lessons a bit later on. But I was just learning expressions and just copying most of the time. But the thing was, when I did start to learn in an academic way, like learning lists of words and learning structure and having somebody explain the grammar to me, it started to conflict with what I realized I was understanding by feeling what somebody was saying and being present with them and working it out based on what was going on around me and the feelings that I was having. And as soon as I started to kick in with the left side of the brain, that side, that left. <Yeah.
laughs> I never know which side is which.
Well, less like the logical side, and it just made me come out of my intuitive reading of what was going on, and made me question what I was intuitively feeling, And I just realized that how intuitive we are and how intuitively we communicate, but language can get in the way of that. Like, because that's just why we're always arguing about words and meanings, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fascinating. When I teach communication theory, which is the launch class that I suggest everybody takes when they really want to dive into communication, I'm taking my son through it because he's not going to college right away. So I'm like, I'm going to home college you. And the communication theory course, I always launch with two different things, which is one is communication is mystical. It doesn't actually work, and it's mystical. Like, it's an illusion that these words have tied down meanings and that we all share those meanings. At best, it's slippery all over the place, and we just act like it's not.
Yeah.
And then there's a mysticism to exchanging symbols back and forth that goes way beyond this idea of I'm giving you information via words. It's just an odd collection of feeling and what isn't present, but is still functional. And it's, you know, when you, communication came up during a time of social science after World War II is when it came into the universities. So it got locked down by science. And they wanted to, you know, be like, oh, here's the model for it. And one of the early models was from Bell Laboratories, where it was basically, here's the user and here's the channel and here's noise and the message and the receiver. It's such a horrible way of thinking about communication. But it is that sense of, until you understand that, yeah, you need to know the logistics of communication and semantics and all that. And then you kind of need to forget them. And learn to communicate with that stuff infusing you, but not dominating you.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. And because I'd learned two languages from scratch within kind of like a 10-year period, I really got a sense for that. I really got a sense that I wasn't always understanding the word or even remembering the words, but I could feel what was going on and I could feel meaning. And that's fascinating. And then the other thing that I've recently been learning is, and I totally get this, it's that we birth our inspiration through our voice as well. So when we, by talking through something, we can land our inspiration on things. We can, our intuition, or our ideas or things birthing through us channel through our through us speaking. And I've really, since I've been aware of this or getting more curious about it, I have noticed that when I'm explaining something, I often go into metaphor when I'm explaining something, and even when I don't really know what I'm talking about or think I don't know what I'm talking about, if I just keep talking, things land for me. I start saying things and gaining an understanding of things by expressing, just by expressing, even when initially I didn't really realize I understood something, or didn't know that that theory was inside of me, or that that idea was inside of me. And that's a fascination to me at the moment. I'm really excited and interested by that.
Yeah, I think it's...
I've been learning reading people and reading, using my intuition. And that's what you're taught. You're taught to just speak, just let it come, what is there, when you're in a state of innocence and curiosity.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, so one of the divisions in rhetoric is the binary between expressive and rhetorical. So rhetorical people want to think about the message, work on it before they release it. And expressive people tend to just say it, and they don't even know what they're going to say until they hear it, until it's coming out of their mouths. And then sometimes you'll look back and go, where did that come from? How did I, because your brain just creates communication on its own. You are not, I'm not in charge right now of what I'm saying. I'm just saying it.
Exactly that. That fascinates me.
Yeah, it's an odd process. So rhetoricians don't like that process because they don't trust your brain to create highly targeted, highly effective messages. But it's just a different orientation. Everybody edits their messages somewhat as they go, and you're doing it just at speed. But a rhetorician wants to slow it all down and be like, I want this to work really well. So what conditions can I set up? What structures, what, you know, ideas can we use and rules and things to make it where it just is so good And that's what people don't understand a lot of times about studying persuasion. They think it's manipulation or trying to get somebody to do something. It's really about maximizing the communication experience so that you get eventually out of it what you want, which is often a satisfying experience. You don't just want to move somebody. You want to have a satisfying experience.
Yeah, you want to connect, don't you? That I think that's the ultimate thing is you're looking for a connection.
Kind of sometimes, although when I do the lunch clubs, it's also I've been trying to, I don't really quantify things, but I'd say 20% of the time, maybe a little less, I just slam into a dysfunctional communicator and they're either trying to sell me something or they're talking in a rote way instead of being present. And it's fine because I like to study dysfunction too, but I don't want to connect to those people. I immediately stop my authentic connecting and I watch what they're doing and see how long I can tolerate it. And then I break them. Like somebody will be pitching, I'll be like, well, so what you're
guilty of similar things.
Like what you're trying, so what you're pitching to me right now is, and that word pitch just triggers them. I'm not pitching. I'm like, sure you are. You're absolutely pitching. Like you've said that exact thing you just said to me probably a few hundred times at least. Yeah, and they just break. And they're like, I'm like, it's okay. I'm not attacking you. I'm just saying, why don't we move that aside and just kind of talk a little bit here and see how that works out?
Yeah. 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 So it's kind of like lack of trust in the self to be able to connect. It's kind of like I've got to say all these right things to connect. I've got to say all these right things to sell. I've got to say all these, you know, it's kind of this. Well, that's for me the distinction between coming from the ego and coming from the heart is, you know, if you think there's so many things you've got to do and it's all about you, then you're not gonna gather that heart connection. Whereas when it's authentic and it's in you're balanced and you're genuine, then naturally you find ways of connecting. I mean, how many things have come up in this conversation between you and I right now, the word we've got in common? And so that's not by accident. That's when you're being authentic. That occurs.
Well, I think, again, I will yank you always back to rhetoric terms and you yank me right back into your terms. That's the way we talk. So, well, you said you have to say all the right things, and that's definitely a rhetorician thing, wordcraft. Getting the messages right. But with you, you're kind of like an intuitive rhetorician. So you have to be in the right emotional space and the right mind frame to authentically connect with somebody. You have to be thinking of yourself as an authentic and being empathetic and being open. And those are all, to me, like that's doing pathos work and rhetoric, but it's creating, again, the conditions to get what you want out of the communication.
Right. I'm doing that totally. I'm doing all this manipulation.
No, it's just construction. It's not manipulation. Like, I don't believe in that word manipulation. I think it's a bad word. So it's just you're uber constructing the moment.
Yeah, but
in a good way.
Interesting though, because I didn't have consciousness around that. That's what I'm thinking, is that it's not something, because I've not studied this, it's not something I'd ever thought about, but it is kind of, it is just very natural and preferred for me. This is something, because I would really like to start speaking on my subjects of being self-referenced, of sovereignty, that's kind of things. I'm very passionate about that. But the idea of having to write myself a script or craft it in some way, I'm like, I can't even.
Well, you can be like that.
I don't have to, because I'm not
like
to.
You can be like Jesus. Jesus never wrote anything down. Just have a people hang around with you taking notes.
Do you know what? I can't fancy myself as a female Jesus. Jesusa.
I don't think you should be named off his name. You got to come with your own name. Like, surely his sister wouldn't have been named Jesusa. What would Jesus' sister have been named?
Well, I'm kind of close. I'm Marie, so I'm kind of close to his mom, aren't I?
I guess a little weird, but yeah, yours mom. It's a weird story. And then God sent a wingman down to impregnate some woman named Mary. What?
Some child called Mary.
How did we slip that one by everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, female Jesus, I like it. You think of yourself as female Jesus? Tell me about that.
Oh, I don't think I do. I think,
it's not a bad thing to aspire to, right? It's not a bad thing to think of, oh, you know, I'd like to be Jesus-like and, you know.
Yeah, I would, in the way that I'm just deeply passionate about people connecting to their own heart and knowing their own truth and following it. Because the biggest lesson I've had in the pandemic is that there is evidence to support any theory or any point of view that you want. You can find a study on anything and everything. And
yeah, there's bad evidence. There's a lot of bad evidence for everything. Again,
do you know what? I've really looked at certain things. You know, I've really wasted quite a lot of time researching things, because I've just felt inside of me that I just don't believe that. I don't believe that. And so going out in search of, and I found good evidence on either side of the fence and couldn't make my mind up based on the evidence that I was finding. And I thought, well, you know what? You've just got to choose what feels and resonates in you. And it does resonate. You know, the truth in you, you can feel your truth.
Yeah, you know, but I know a lot of people who feel their truth, and I'm like, you don't, that's a bad truth. Like, your truth is off key. Like, what do you do about that? Because, like, this is, and again, like, I have lots of fans or friends who are, you know, in the healing arts and alternative world, and I love it. I love all of it, listening to it. You know, I don't believe any of it because I'm a rhetorician, so I can't believe. I can't be a believer and a rhetorician. Like, they can't live in the same body. But I love listening to it. But the rhetorician in me is always going to find, not to try to deconstruct it or to contradict it, but it's going to find the other things that you're not seeing or saying. And so when I hear people say, like, you got to find your own truth, I know people that have found their truth right now and are basically buying a bunch of guns and joining militias here in Texas because they believe the government's coming after them. And that is their truth. And I'm like, no, 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 bad truth. No,
that's not truth. That's fear. That's the difference. You see, the thing is, a truth that a real heartfelt truth is based in love. It's not based in fear.
But that statement sounds awesome. You're totally for the positive feelings of life. I can tell, you know,
I absolutely am. But the thing is there is a big difference between a truth that resonates and a truth that you think is a truth, a thinking truth, which is coming out of defense and coming from your ego, is very different from a truth that's resonating in you. That is the difference. And there are certain states to help make you aware of this. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about things like this at the moment, and a lot of people putting their ideas out about this. But it really is, what it boils down to is a sense of innocence and curiosity and neutrality. And when you are really centered and you are without all your baggage and you've taken off all your stresses and everything else, and you're in a sense of pure curiosity and innocence, then from that place, you can, when you connect to your heart, when you connect to what you want from a more a calmed, neutral sense of mind state, then and even when you speak to other people from that place, they feel in them your that they feel in them the truth. You it's a shared thing. It's what we talk about, resonating. But when somebody is talking from total fear, and they're passionately putting out things that are frightening them to death, and they're wanting to wake you up. There's lots of that, isn't there? Wanting to wake you up to my truth, because, and actually, it's fear spreading, and exactly, and that results in exactly what they don't want. It results in the opposite. You see a lot of this with, I've got, well, I did have quite a lot of conspiracy theorist friends, and the thing was, what was really challenging me about that was that there were certain facts in what they were saying that I knew to be true, but it was the bit in the middle, the missing bit of information between two facts, two facts that didn't make sense, and the missing bit of information in the middle that was the theory of how these two facts connect, would make it sound absurd, and then the whole thing gets dismissed. When in actual fact there is something in there, that there is some truths in there, but it's the way that's been packaged makes it into a load of nonsense. So this really fascinated me and really interested me, and it was funny that after that, that's when this new the latest thing that I started to learn, which is it's actually with a guy called William White Cloud, is based in California, but he's a South I think he's African. I think I don't remember what part of Africa.
Hold on
White
to him for
African.
just a second, because I want to talk about what you're just saying,
Yeah.
the idea of conspiracy theories and like there's enough logic in there to keep people from completely breaking. Like there's enough neural network that you're like, okay, there's a little bit of truth in there. There's a couple of facts in there. My world answers these challenges or these dysfunctional worldviews, these dysfunctional choices, by saying, okay, well, where does your logic suddenly shift into bad logic? So you have some good logic in there, but what's happened from a rhetorical global perspective is there's a second form of logic that has been overlaid on the primary form of logic, and it comes from propaganda and that whole world, the whole fictionized world, and it's been put on top of it, and people have crushed it together like this sandwich, and they can't tell the difference to on the sides anymore. And so to them, the world makes logical sense within those two systems being crushed together. And my job a lot of times is to go and go, you know what? I'm going to take your sandwich apart. I'm going to get rid of this bad piece of rye bread or whatever it is, pumpernickel that you've been given. And we're going to go straight up, ancient grains or something, because you are getting confused cognitively by a language system. And when that happens, you have to go in and clean that up. Now you have to get them to accept they need to clean it up, which kind of gets more into your world of them understanding that this is making them unhappy. They're frustrated and angry and fearful all the time. Like, don't you want to get away from those feelings? Those are horrible.
It
So.
is, and it's self-defeating because. Do you want me to turn my light on? I'm sitting here in the dark
No,
now.
you're good. You
Sun's come
have good
down.
lighting. That's good.
Oh, am I
Don't
all
mess
right?
with it.
So, it's exactly that. The fact that the fact that putting fear out brings what you don't want. Because it's been in, when you're working from fear, you're trying to get validation, and the more you try to get validation, the more you just it just doesn't satisfy. validation never satisfies you. To get external validation.
I love external validation. What's wrong with it? You ever had 300 people laugh and applaud for you at a comedy club on Saturday night? It's like this ocean wave of validation. It obsesses people. They end up so addicted to it that it's crazy.
Addictive, exactly. It's incredibly addictive. It's incredibly addictive. And
but don't you want me to validate you right now? Wouldn't that be good? Right? We should validate each other constantly.
No.
We should give out validations endlessly. They're free.
It's beautiful.
Good.
I agree. And I do. And I do a lot. I do. However, I read the Four Agreements recently, and I read it three times in a very short space of time, because what I loved, I don't know if you're familiar with the Four Agreements.
The first one,
be impeccable with your word. The second one is, don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and do your best. Yeah.
Again, comedy and rhetoric play with everything. So mine is the four invalidations. Like, here's how I'm going to destroy our relationship. Are you ready? Here we go.
Go on.
No, that's
the thing is that the bit that I really, really, really loved was the bit about don't take anything personally, but don't take anything personally, good or bad, because when you're taking something personally that's bad and you walk away from that, then yes, it's when you get to that level of maturity of not taking things personally that are about the other person or that's nothing to do with you. It's their stuff that's going on. It's not yours. It's getting projected on you, etc. Like, getting to that place is empowering. But I tell you what's even more empowering is not needing to take the good personally either. That's real empowerment.
It's kind of the Eastern sort of mysticism core concepts of getting rid of the ego and the self and just existing, not allowing these things that are coming at you from the world to tear you apart, no matter whether they're good or bad. Like the whole basis of a lot of Buddhism and sort of Eastern mysticism is the destruction of the individual in a good way, or the dissolution of the individual need and want.
Yeah, but not to, I think it can get misinterpreted when we assume that means not to feel and not to feel. But it isn't about not feeling. Because you do feel when you can let go of all of that, and you don't need positive, or you know, you can let go of the negative, but you can also let go of the positive and not need it. That's real sovereignty. That's when you don't need any codependence. That's when you're really in your power. And that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I want everyone to understand. And do you know that famous speech by Steve Jobs, where he talks about finding your true vocation and never letting your voice be drowned out by the rhetoric of other people, and never, like, find
hey,
what
careful,
you love.
Don't slander my word, my rhetorician, my rhetoric word.
No, but he does. He talks about the fact that in this fabulous speech that he did, I think it was at Princeton or Yale University or something like that. And he was talking about, like, find what your passion is, find what your dream is, find what you really want to do.
Especially if it's technological and will make you a billionaire. He lead that little footnote.
That's what he did, isn't it? He followed his passion.
I don't know if that's what he did or not, or if he's backfilling this with, you know, that's what I did and look how successful it was. I don't know.
No, if you listen to that speech, it's very impressive. It really impresses me. And he talks about following your heart, finding your finding your passion, and if you don't find it straight away, keep looking. And don't let the noise, how does he say it? Don't let the noise of other people's, I can't remember how it, I wish I could quote it because it's fabulous the way he words it. But it's like, don't let the words of other people drown out your inner voice. What you know to be true for you, don't let others drown it out. And I think we live in a world of drowned out, that drowns out what we think. It's like it just turns us into sheep, the stuff that comes up as the fear that's constantly coming at us turns us into sheep. We maybe just like forget our own voice.
I think sometimes I have a hard time getting into that space because I've always had such a loud voice inside my head. Like, very early at 5 years old when I lived in Kentucky, you're talking about escaping Yorkshire and I escaped Kentucky. It was going, hey, get out of here. Like, this is not acceptable level of human, you know, existence. Go. And so, like, I don't care what anybody else says. Like, I've never had noise that's louder than what's in my head to drown out that inner beacon that's telling me, no, go there because that's better. Quit hanging out with this because this is not what you want. And I think, you know, that's not the same for everybody. Clearly, everybody does end up with noise in their head and they need beacons to help them out of it. I think things like, you know, jobs or whenever somebody makes a really good message that gives people a beacon, type of beacon out of things. And I think that's what you do. It sounds like I think most alternative people and healers are trying to create strong beacons for people to follow to get out of that noise, you know, because you believe that is going to be healthier and that they're going to be happier and more fulfilled and more real and all that good reward. So that's why I always admire people who are doing it. And I've talked to past life shaman regressors. They're all trying to do the same thing. It's like, hey, I've got a modality that can get you to the beacon.
Yeah.
I love that offer. So,
yeah, and you know, and I'm open to any that work. I don't peddle a particular one. It's, you know, I acknowledge that there are many different routes to these things. However, I just get upset when people get kind of stuck in the woo woo. It's a little bit like the way the Bible can be very badly interpreted in a very literal way. And then exactly the same can happen to any of these healing modalities where people are just not actually connecting with the intention of it. They're connecting with, they're breaking it down and trying to make it logical and trying to make it fit into something and trying to make sense of something. And trying to validate something, because as soon as you're going after validation, you're screwed.
I don't know. I like it. I completely agree with that statement that chasing validation is a bad policy. Mm. I also completely think that if you understand that, you can still feed on validation just as like snacks. It's just so much fun to do things like when you entertain people and you make people laugh. Cool. It is a validation, cool. You know, or when you make a really good intellectual point, you really, you know, bring something together and make it a nice little communication ingot that everybody can understand. That's awesome. That feeling of doing that for other people is awesome.
It is. I totally agree with that. And we are hardwired to connect. I really do believe that. And
it's getting darker there because you're kind of descending into the darkness.
I know. And my face is getting whiter
and whiter and whiter. And it's like, oh, she's turning into her vampire self as we talk.
It will be soon. Well, it's just that I've sat by the window and the sun's gone down because it's now like here, it's 5 to 7. And it's moving towards that time of year and I'm going to escape the winter. I'm so excited that the weekend that the clocks change is probably 2 days later, I'm going to be out of here. So I am
nice.
Not
talk really. About that. You're getting to go back to Peru. That's a nice energy in it. Talk about that. How'd that come about? They're back open or?
Well, they're open enough they're open enough to let me back in. So I officially won't be allowed to come back here, because they're a red country. But their stats are going, the virus has gone down tons, as it's calming down everywhere, I think. And
What
so
in countries like that, like again, across different cultures, it's so different how you get people to accept the vaccine and things like that. Like, I guess because Peru, almost any time that I've watched any sort of media on it, it's some documentary or something about indigenous Peru. And
there's a lot of poverty.
like,
There's a lot.
what is the, maybe you can answer this, maybe you can't, but like, what's the reaction to something like this modern tech protecting vaccine there? Like, are they pro, are they doing it or not?
Well, yeah, pretty much. The thing is with the thing. It, I live in South Peru, in Cusco, near Cusco, and I live in a mountain village. I live in an Inca town. It's
Like how you
called
stopped there. I live
Ollantaytambo.
in a mountain. Like, I live inside a Peruvian
No, I'd like to
mountain,
live inside a
an
mountain,
old
but I'm
dwarf mine,
surrounded by mountains. I'm
surrounded
surrounded
by
by mountains.
silver and dragons. Okay.
Yeah. There I am in my cave with my cauldron and stirring it up. No, unfortunately not, but I am surrounded by them, and there's an incredible fortress in Ollantaytambo where I live. And it's the stop, it's the train stop for Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu is the next, it's where you get the train to Machu Picchu. And it's beautiful. It's a living Inca town. People are living in the Inca buildings, and it's got all those, the stones that are just locked together with no cement. And yeah, it's beautiful, incredibly beautiful. And I've forgotten the point of what I was
Oh,
telling
sorry.
you.
Well, I sometimes I can't stop this. I find something interesting or funny and I drag it over there, but I'll drag it back. So
Oh
you're
yeah,
talking about getting to go back
vaccines. The
the
it was
vaccine.
you're talking about the vaccines. Yeah. The thing is, generally speaking, they're not educated. They don't have access to good education, and many of the communities that are close by, that Ollantaytambo is the town, and there's people living up in the mountains and communities, and they have very limited schooling. They often don't speak Spanish, they speak Quechua, so they don't even have facility in the greater, in the bigger cities and things like that, because they don't necessarily all speak Spanish even. So it's very, very limited education. So if they're told that sticking this in their arm is going to stop them dying, they'll stick it in their arm. It's as simple as that.
Well, they're not
They
having a
will.
bunch of disinformation coming at them too, right?
No, they're
It's a
not.
better system.
Well, it depends which side of the fence you're on as to whether you call that disinformation, doesn't it? So,
I'm on the correct side of the fence.
okay.
I stand
I
on the
think I
correct,
might
that's
be.
my policy, is I always try to make sure I stand on the correct side of the fence.
Well, you see, the thing is that's an interesting thing for me, because you see, I just believe that you should be able to do what's true for you and what you believe in, and I think everybody should have that choice.
Horrible policy.
Well, that's what I believe,
I
because
believe that too, like as a general rule for human beings, but the specifics of how it plays out in the modern world, very bad policy. Like I've got friends who I know a guy who's, high school education, and he's given me his research for why he's not taking the vaccine. I'm like, so what you're telling me is the most scientifically advanced medical product ever created on the face of the earth,
untested, except on the
on the face of
population.
the, it's been tested in 4 billion people now.
And now it has, yeah, now it has.
What you're
And
telling me is you, Mr. High School, are going to make your own decision about it. Now, as a rhetorician, again, and again, this is not a personal judgment. I don't judge anybody. I judge their rhetoric. I judge their process. I'm like, that is the, like, if I came to you and said, okay, I'm going to let this engineer who's built 50 bridges build this bridge, but I'm also going to let this guy over here, didn't get out of high school, throw his ideas in there, and we're going to use them both. What do you think? You want to drive over that bridge?
Oh, I'm not finding that a very good analogy.
It's just science. Like, do you trust somebody who does science, or do you trust somebody who has intuition?
Do you know what? Yes. Yes, there's a good point, because I trust the person that does intuition more.
But intuition can be horrible. People can be horrible intuition.
There's no such thing as horrible intuition.
They can be completely off in their intuition.
Not unless they're not in their intuition.
You've never misjudged someone?
I don't think I would ever misjudge somebody from my intuition if I were purely in my intuition.
So it's just better intuition.
Knowing that you're in your intuition and knowing how to access your intuition, now that's questionable.
But how can you have intuition about a medical product?
Well, I think you can. I think you can know your own truth as to whether you think you need it or not.
So if you walked up and the syringe, there was just a syringe sitting on a table.
Yeah.
And you'd never heard about this. And you're like, okay, well, my intuition says to let them put this in my arm. You wouldn't do that. You'd get information. You'd be like, well, what is it? What's it do? Then, and then it's not intuition. It's a cognitive choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the thing is what happens when that information is not available, because it hadn't yet been tested widely, and the way that the data is collected for adverse reaction is not collated accurately or well, and that
but you're okay. So we're gonna get off this. I'm gonna talk about Peru again, but just remember, like, you're an intuition expert, right? A wellness expert.
This
is what you do, right?
I do know quite a lot about it. Yeah.
You're not a scientist. That's not what you do.
Do you know what? I have a very strong science background.
Yeah.
I have studied tons of stuff scientifically.
Like as an undergraduate, but it's not your job. Yeah. You're not a super expert in science.
Oh God, no, I'm not a scientist. No. Yeah. No. No, but I can read studies, and I can, you know, I've learned to critically assess studies and things like that. You know, it's like I don't just read something in a magazine and believe it. You know,
no, of course
I know
not.
How to look up studies, and I know how to critique a study, and you know, I.
Right. But this, again, this is what I do. So this side of the world is like rhetoric bells going off, like somebody claiming some primacy to make a decision on something like this because of their belief in themselves. That's just a rhetoric. Like, that's just something you've been taught, or you've absorbed, and you believe as the best system for you. So if I want to get in there and interrupt that, because I think it's dangerous, or I don't like it, or whatever, then I would just go in and I would start moving your belief system around.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because I would argue that your belief system is your ego validating you. And I would argue that your intuition transcends that.
That tuition thing is a slippery slope, because defining it, knowing it, and like, you spend a lot of time in your life getting in touch with it. Like, it sounds like you are a super expert in intuition. You think in these terms a lot, and you work in these, and you see it in other people, and probably far more than 99.999% of the population. So you have a different feeling and different attachment to intuition than others.
Yeah, I think intuition can be badly interpreted. I think that's absolutely right. And I think when somebody thinks that that it's when somebody has a reaction and they can't explain their reaction and they think that that is their intuition, it's not. And that's the problem with not understanding really what intuition is. Because yes. Intuition is not a gut reaction in fear. That is not intuition.
It's like a smackdown, intuition versus cognition. Here we go.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the thing is you need both. You need both.
Do you need to get back in your coffin yet? You look like you're...
I told you I could turn the light on. Do you want me to turn the light on?
Try it. Let's see. I don't want you to disappear into the darkness where you're just some...
I'm just going to turn the light on.
Some irises kind of in the dark.
There we go. Ta-da!
Now you are bathed in the light... of cognition.
I'm back in the light. It's coming. You know what? There's
intuition is bathing over you and lighting you. It's an intuitive light bulb.
You've been with me this morning, right? This morning, I was doing a session with somebody, and we were doing some visioning of something they want to create. Yeah. And I was sat on the other chair, and the light was coming through the window, and I'd got this rainbow, like central violet light coming right through me and the outside, and like the visioning and the intuition coming through me. You would not believe. I couldn't even believe what I was coming up with. And the person that I was working with, they're going, you got a purple light coming through your head.
That's great.
You can make it up.
Yeah, then it becomes like a seance. Like you're being supernaturally bathed in forces.
I'm like, I didn't do this on purpose. It's like it's the sun just coming.
You gotta set that up as your thing. Like you can be the purple light mystic.
It's like I'm channeling. It's like I'm so not like I just don't like that kind of wacky descriptions and stuff, but it was really funny this morning when that was happening because we do literally.
I like it. I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to have like a colored light switcher over here, and it's just going to be like turn me green and things when I'm talking about different things. So when I start talking about logic, I'm going to be like cold blue, cold blueness of logic. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. But
so you're going to go back. You're going to go back to Peru. Tell me what that's going to look like. What are you going to do? You going to start things up again, or?
I honestly don't know right now. I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. I have a house that's kind of derelict that I bought, I don't know, about 5 years ago. And at the time I was focused on my business and creating that and setting that up. Whereas now that I've decided I would like to be based back in the UK, I've kind of got used to a first world way of life. I've started to benefit from technology again. And I kind of thought, you know what? I do need to educate, because I've got a younger son now. I've got a 7-year-old, I do need to educate him back here. I can't educate him. I can, his primary education, I'm absolutely fine for that to be fluid. And it's more important to me that he speaks Spanish well and English. So that's more of a priority for me at the moment. But when it gets to secondary, he's got to be in a first world country. I don't want to educate him over there. So I've got 3 years. And I want to get my house. I want to get my base, because I want to be able to have time over there. I want to be able to spend at least 3 months running my retreats through, June, July, August, maybe some of September. So I want a base out there. So I think when I first go, I'm going to be looking at that, sorting out my house. It's, at the moment, it's just a bunch of Inca walls. So making that habitable. and seeing how things pick up, because obviously there isn't tourism there yet. So I'm working on, at the moment I'm collaborating with a number of people to work on my workshops and my offerings and what I'm going to do when I can open. But to be honest, it's not essential that I've got a centre, because there's plenty of hotels, outside space. I can be easily accommodated. I don't need to be worried about having a business and living at the other side of the world and all the hassle and the everything around that. I don't necessarily need it. There's enough facility out there that I can that I can buy into to run what I want to run. So I think, ironically, now that I'm skilled up and now that I can do all those things, I can't actually, because of the situation and people not being able to travel, yet. So what I will do is probably focus on my base and getting my house sorted out, and then looking at what I can do next, because I'm thinking by spring bank next year that people are going to be climbing the walls to get out, don't you think?
Yeah,
I mean, I already am,
you would think
and
so. The
I'm
pent-up energy of 2 years of, non-community
yeah.
or weaker forms of community, for sure.
Absolutely. So I think by then, and it will have given me time to have got myself based, properly. So yeah,
Well, it's
that's the goal.
exciting. I mean,
What is it?
the world is the world, right? The world shuts and closes and falls apart and reassembles. And you're like, I guess I'm in the middle of this. It's like, I guess I'll adjust and do my thing in whatever configuration the world decides it's going to throw at me. But it is it when I see somebody like you who's found, sort of strong themes in her life and has pursued them strongly and gotten things and felt things ebb away and go find another version of it. Like it's really cool to see somebody that's working in an area that's completely not me. It's completely not what I do, but I completely appreciate how much effort it takes and that you're authentically bringing this to the world and to people. So it's cool.
Oh, thank you. That's
Yeah.
kind. I feel very validated. Thank you.
Yes, you should feel validated.
I
Now let it go and just forget I ever said it.
it. I'm still gonna do it anyway. And yeah, so but yeah, I know I do appreciate that. But yeah, I do like that about myself. I do like the fact that, like you, I've never really been a person that gets my inner voice shouted down. I have, and especially being female as well. I don't know how many times I've had to fight tooth and nail to push to do what I want to do, but I just makes me stronger, just makes me want to do it more. So, but I do feel for people who I mean, I just have that sort of personality, but I do see so many people that get very oppressed and don't have that inner strength or free energy to create what they want.
Yeah,
And
it's an
that's
unfair fight in a lot of ways. There's a lot of unfair fights out there and individuals being told that, you should push on through. I'm like, that's awesome advice from a distance, but you need to strengthen people and give them the tools to push on through
yeah.
noise and avalanches and all the things that life is going to throw at you. You can't just say, go do it. You got to
No.
empower people. And again, it sounds like that's what you're doing. So super cool. Well,
Yeah,
tell people how to
and
find your stuff. Like tell people if they want to talk to you and they've been like, oh, she's so intuitive and Dan is so cognitive. I'd rather talk to the Intuit. How do they find you?
can be pretty logical as well. Through my You can find me on LinkedIn quite easily, and through my website, almaamour.com. It's spelt exactly as it sounds, and yeah, be happy for anybody to connect with me if you want to talk about anything or interested in my services. They're not up on my website yet because I'm still in creation mode, but they will be soon. And yeah, anybody wants to come out to Peru or anybody wants to collaborate, anybody's interested in what I'm talking about, feels the same, then you know I love connecting. I love Lunch Club. That's why I'm a proper that day when I met you, I was it was I'm like, God, 15 minutes I can speak to anybody in the other anybody anywhere in the world that's got some kind of interest that I've got, because you set up your interest, don't you, on there, your profile on there, and just connect with
Yeah,
I was wet in my pants with excitement. I can't think of another expression, but I was absolutely wet in my pants with every single person was so interesting. And yeah, it was really good. So I'm happy, always happy to connect with people and talk with people about stuff. I mean, I'm a bit busy moving to
That
Peru
would
in
do
the
it.
next few weeks. But if you drop me, if anybody drops me a note on LinkedIn or contacts me through my website, then I'll be in touch sooner or later. But it just might be a little bit later than sooner at the moment.
Well, I'll circle back around once you're in Peru. We'll talk again. This is super
Yeah, I'll share
fun.
with you. I won't be sat in the dark like this with my grand's wallpaper.
I expect some type of glowing rainbow effect, aura of Peru, like whatever it is. I expect you to have the hat with the, don't they have the tassel, the ball tassels in Peru, or is that another culture? No, that's Argentina.
They have all kinds of stuff. They have all kinds of costumes, and they all dress up and party like rock stars during Pentecost and right through the summer. They dance nonstop. That's another thing. I just love to dance, and you know, English people can't dance to save their lives. So sometimes I think I landed here by accident. I'm glad I speak English, right? But I don't know how I ended up being English.
Yeah, who knows? These crazy karmic merry-go-rounds. You drop off the merry-go-round at the wrong spot this life. So,
That's right. Well, you don't have to stay anywhere you don't want to be.
well, cool. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks for jumping on and talking. Good
You
luck
too,
moving to
Steve.
Peru again. We'll check
Come
back in with
visit
you.
me. You have to come visit me. You're not very far away.
I'm not.
No? Bless
I'm
your
in
heart.
Texas. It used to
Yeah.
be Inca
It's
land,
interesting.
probably, or Mayan land here at some
Yeah.
point. Well, again, enjoyed it, everybody. This has been Marie, and go check out her stuff. And we will come back around and talk to you again. Everybody, thanks for coming to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Get out there and persuade some people. As always, they need it. Oops. Oh, I hit the end meeting, so I guess I'm just going to jump off.